vocal fry, as all the people who hated on NPR
Ira
said.
Glass.
Mm-hmm.
Ira ass. Keep that in.
Welcome to the Pre-Dead Boys. It's a podcast about the history and culture of death and decomposition. My name is Dorian. With me, as always, is Max. And we're coming at you live this morning on...
Morning?
Yeah, the morning radio hour on KDED with Mayhem Max.
Well, I don't think AM radio guys are like that.
And Ding Dong Dorian. Coming at you live on our new... We're doing a new thing on this podcast. We're a raunchy morning talk show.
A morning zoo.
Shock jocks.
That's ass.
Ooh, you can't say ass, but you can talk about a butthole on raunchy radio. I think there's weird lines like that. Like, you're not allowed to cuss, but you can talk about explicit stories of genitals and stuff like that.
As long as you don't say a swear.
Yeah. If I've learned anything from being in fifth grade and listening to Howard Stern when I should not have been, that's what I learned.
Here's a good story. My parents... once decided that a good way to settle one of their marital disputes was to go on a morning zoo, like, court radio thing.
No way.
Yeah, they wanted, my dad wanted a charcoal grill, and my mom wanted a gas grill. And so they went to, like, WNCI or whatever, or, like, the Blitz, which is just, like, butt rock here in Columbus.
Uh-huh.
And they went on their, like, morning zoo marriage court thing.
Okay. Did it work
Duked
out?
Duked it out, and we got a gas grill because my mom won.
Okay.
And I think they gave us like a $50 gift card.
Oh, that's kind of cool.
I remember them taping it, so it's somewhere. It exists somewhere.
Oh, man.
So my family has a long history in radio, is what I'm saying.
Do they still have the gas grill?
They might. No, they got a new one recently.
Uh-huh.
There's a new one.
I don't know if one is necessarily better than the other. I just know I had a gas grill, and it kind of shit the bed on me. Like, replaced the tank, and it still didn't work. So, I don't know. I might be team dad on this one, but I'm not committed. But I'm glad that they got it figured out.
I'll tell Jamie and Justine. How you doing? You doing good?
Yeah, I'm doing great. I'm ready to record a podcast in the morning. This is weird.
It's weird.
We usually record it after dark, and then I'm, like, hustling to try and get out of Max's house so he can go to bed. But it's a lovely morning.
Yeah, it's a lovely morning. I got mail from Stamps.com, which longtime listeners will know fuck Stamps.com.
Yeah. Post offices rule, and you should go to them and say hi to your local post office workers.
I saw The Lighthouse.
Oh,
so
shit.
So join our Discord and talk to me about The Lighthouse.
Okay, yeah.
Please.
I'll talk through all the, you know, stuff at the end of the episode, but we have a Discord now. I still don't fully know how Discord works. I just talked to some friends on it on a couple different little servers. So if you're on Discord and want to join, shoot me a message and I'll send you an invite.
Yeah.
And you get a special little thing next to your name if you are a Patreon supporter.
Yep.
I should probably not open the episode with self-promotion. We've got some...
I just want to talk about The Lighthouse, man. It was dope. It was very cool.
We'll save it. Okay. For now, we've got some important business to get down to.
All right.
Some dangerous business.
Dangerous business. I like that you kind of took charge of the segue there. I kind of like that. I kind of like that because I'm very safe. And I'm very timid.
Mm-hmm.
You kind of live on the edge.
I don't know about that, but it's a facade.
I mean, you're like shooting yourself out of cannons all the time and jumping across the Grand Canyon.
Yeah, that's true.
Dope shit. Like that. Like a daredevil.
Yeah.
So that's what we're going to be talking about today. Daredevils.
Woo!
So, not the coffee.
Yeah, it's throwing me off. Because it's morning, I have a coffee in hand and not a seltzer water.
Yeah.
So let's crack into the topic by throwing the lid off of this coffee.
Just ripping coffee and spilling coffee all over my house. No, let's crack into it. Let's crack into daredevils with the Pre-Dead Boys cracking on the topic moment. brought to you by La Kroger.
Mandarin Orange.
It's good.
You love to sip it.
So, Daredevil. You excited to get really, really into, like, the Netflix Marvel comics?
Motherfucker,
universe.
I knew you would
Daredevil and Punisher and Luke Cage and Jessica Jones, Iron Fist. I was kind of blown away by how many of these, like, series there were.
There's a lot. Yeah,
Marvel, they all got canceled.
Yeah, Marvel was making their own little universe, and they were like, actually, Disney. So, fair play to them. I knew you'd have at least one fucking joke about that.
Get out of the way early.
There we go.
Did you get into any of those?
No.
There was too much.
Yeah.
I like, if a TV show is longer than like an hour or has more than like two seasons, I will not watch it because I am bad at TV.
Yeah, I'm just kind of done with superhero stuff for the most part, mm-hmm. with some exceptions. But yeah, I don't regret not watching those shows.
You just got through Twin Peaks though, right?
I finished Twin Peaks. Man, we...
Beautiful.
We're, what, 10 minutes into recording, and there's, like, 15 things we've mentioned that I want to talk about, and I'm desperately trying to stay on topic, but we'll talk about Twin Peaks at some point.
Yeah, it's too early to be this goofed up. So, Dorian, what's the background on Daredevils? What's their deal?
What's the deal with Daredevils?
What's up with Daredevils?
A Daredevil... Also, a stunt performer is a trained professional who performs stunts, often as a career. Stunt performers usually appear in films or on television as opposed to a daredevil who performs for a live audience. From its inception as a professional skill in the early 1900s, stunts were most often performed by professionals who had trained in that discipline. Current film and television stunt performers must be trained in a variety of disciplines, including martial arts and stage combat, and must be a certified, trained member of a professional stunt performer's organization first, in order to obtain the necessary insurance. This allows them to better break down and plan an action sequence, physically prepare themselves, and incorporate both the safety and risk factors in their performance. However, even when executed perfectly, there is still strain, and performing stunts often results in unplanned injury to the body. Daredevils, however, are distinct from stunt performers. Their performance is of the stunt itself without the context of a film or television show. Daredevils often perform for an audience. Live stunt performers include escape artists, sword swallowers, glass walkers, fire eaters, and trapeze artists.
So all that's well and fine, but I also pulled the etymology of the word daredevil off of the Online Etymology Dictionary,
mm-hmm.
which is, like, one of my favorite websites.
You're such a nerd.
Yeah. But I really like when, like, a very smart-sounding thing breaks down a word in a very goofy way, and the etymology of daredevil was particularly good. So I'm going to have you read that as well.
Daredevil. Noun. 1794. Recklessly daring person, one who fears nothing and will attempt anything. From dare plus devil. The devil might refer to the person, or the sense might be one who dares the devil. Also, fear babe, a 16C word for something that frightens children.
Fear babe is really good.
You're putting me in a... in a tricky situation where I got to decide on the title of this episode when I publish it. It's either going to be Daredevils or Fear Babes.
Fear Babes.
And I think Daredevils might be better for the SEO, but... Fear Babes is pretty
I think
great.
We should bring it back.
Fear Babes.
Like, I don't know. I can't think of the last time I saw someone doing a Daredevil thing. But I'm going to call that person a Fear Babe next time I see it.
Fear Babe, Evel Knievel.
Oh, we got some Evel Knievel talk coming up.
Oh, shit, yeah. Love it.
So, you know, the line between daredevils, fear babes, and stunt performers can get a little blurred. So people have always done things for, like, the adrenaline rush, you know?
Right.
People like that. But the idea of devoting your life to pursuing that as, like, a career or anything can't really happen unless the culture that you're a part of supports a middle class that places a value on entertainment. If you're living in 700, you're going to be focused on farming enough soybeans to not die, you know?
Sure, yeah.
Like, someone could be climbing a mountain, and you're going to be like, well, I'm about to get killed in a siege, so I can't, like, what am I going to do, you know?
Right. You got bigger fish to fry.
Yeah. So, people have always, like, climbed things and done that, like, have adventured and everything, but it can't really be turned into entertainment or monetized.
Sure. Was it just kind of a personal achievement sort of thing? Like, I feel good about myself having done this, or?
Yeah, basically, yeah, like old-timey adventurers and, like, you know.
Sure.
Just goofy.
Just goofballs.
Just goofballs.
Throwing their bodies up mountains.
And you also gotta consider that, like, people hadn't invented, like, parachutes or squirrel suits or harnesses or a lot of things.
So do you think that they were like I am when I go to a climbing gym and I climb up like 3 holds with no rope and I'm like, whoa, guys.
Like, I'm a god. Probably. I don't know. I don't even know what 3 holds means because I don't like heights. So.
Oh, man. We are so qualified to talk about some of the stuff we're going to cover in this episode. Yeah. I'm very excited.
There was also stuff like jousting, which I don't really know anything about.
Yeah.
But that's kind of probably about as daredevil-y as you could have gotten.
Sure.
Because you were getting smashed by a big wooden pole, you know?
Sure. And I kind of wonder if there's a little bit of a correlation, too, between did daredevilry or fear-babery get more popular as war was getting less and less about physical combat and valor? You know what I mean? Like, I can't help but kind of see it. At least some coordination over history of, like,
it was less to do with proving yourself and more to do with,
or there was the just rush. Less, like, dying in battle was, like, the most honor-filled okay. thing that you could do in some cultures, some ancient cultures. And just in absence of that, or, like, yes, I was part of this military campaign that did this. Like, in That's absence true, of that, yeah. just kind of having something to be, something to brag about. This yeah, is all about having stuff to brag about.
Yeah. It really is. And I, you know, it makes sense. Like, if you were just, like, climbing up the side of a cliff and you were a Viking and then you fell and died, like, that's probably not that honorable or anything.
Yeah, you go to, what was the goofy heaven? Not Valhalla? Helheim. Helheim was, like, the kind of middle ground. Heroes go to Valhalla. Helheim is, like, well, you know, I've, like, worked a steady job and...
That's like if you died of old age, you went there, right?
Yeah, the peaceful causes. And then if you are a real goof and fuck things up, you go to Folkvang.
That's right.
Yes. Go listen to our Norse mythology episode to learn more about that.
There you go. And, you know, so it might have something to do with that, but you can't monetize an entertainment profession unless people have the free time to be entertained. Which right. is why the thing we think of when we think of daredevils really didn't become popular until the 1850s and on. You know, this is when, like, labor had organized to a point where the middle class was able to earn a comfortable wage without having to work every day of the week. So this is when doing stunts for a living starts to actually become a possibility.
The idea of stunt shows developed during the 19th century traveling vaudeville performances of the early Wild West shows in North America and Europe. One of the first Wild West stunt shows was Buffalo Bills, formed in 1883 and lasting until 1913. These involved simulated battles with the associated firing of both guns and arrows. Starting in the late 19th century, stage combat and swordplay shows toured throughout Europe. Fencing masters practiced with swords, rapiers, and daggers in performative styles. Stage combat classes were regularly taught in France and England, and students from all over the world began studying at these schools.
Yeah, so these early daredevil events, they didn't have, like, blanks yet, or, like, fake arrows. So a lot of these early Wild West shows were people who were actually good at, like, just slightly missing things by firing guns.
Yeah.
and like Jesus. Arrows, which is outrageous.
Yeah, you know. Once I read Arrows there, I was like, oh, word? That's frightening.
Yeah. Just like flying around. And you had to make it look real, so you can't like, you know.
Right. And an arrow, like, there's only so much dulling of an arrow you can do. It's really, if you're shooting an arrow at any kind of velocity, it's either going to hurt like hell or it's going to do some damage.
Yeah.
Regardless of how sharp it actually is. You can't, like, make an arrow too safe. You ever been hit in the eye with a Nerf dart?
No, but it sounds terrible.
That's the best case scenario. Imagine if it were a wooden arrow.
Yeah, a sharp stick. But there are a couple other things to note here. One that you might be interested in was that these English schools that taught stage combat and swordplay,
yes,
they are credited with introducing jiu-jitsu to the West from Japan.
Wow, very cool.
Yeah, so they were really popular, and they wanted to train people in different styles, so they would have basically scouts go out from these schools all over the world and then bring people back to have diverse fighting styles, and it opened up the door to, like, combat sports.
Yeah.
As we know it today.
That's really cool.
Yeah.
That makes a lot of sense, too, because there is, I mean, there's a big judo background in Europe, and especially England, that, like, this explains where it comes from. Because early, like, Japanese jiu-jitsu was closer to something like judo, where it's more about tossing and, like, not like Brazilian jiu-jitsu today, where it's about, like, choking someone out. So it makes sense. I never saw that connection before. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, it's neat. I know they talked about
this is martial arts dork out hour with Dorian.
Oh, if you really want martial arts dork out hour, you can go watch Fighting in the Age of Loneliness.
Yeah.
It's very good.
Oh my god.
Incredible.
I've watched that like 17 times. It's so good.
But second, so when daredevils were first starting out, they were known as cascador.
Cascador?
Cascador. Ooh. So far we've got Fear Babes and cascador, which are both really cool. But that's in reference to the French word for waterfall, which is cascade. Because performers would fall and tumble and like move around the stage like water.
Cascadeur.
Cascadeur. So, as some of these early performers began to really refine their trade, that's when they started getting traction with, like, circuses, traveling shows. It's when you started having the idea of, like, a big, like, the Dumbo-style circus.
Right.
You know, or, like, Greatest Showman, where it's, like...
Flying elephants, yes.
All that stuff. You know, where it's, like, the big top and big tents and right. People were coming around, you know?
Yeah.
That also kind of joined up with when the film and movie industry was heating up.
Yeah.
And a lot of the folks who had been doing combat, Wild West, circus shows, they moved into the movies as well, where they could get paid for what they were doing.
Hmm. In many early movies, there wasn't a need for stunt performers. Not because dangerous stunts weren't being performed, but because there were more than enough applicants willing to do the scene for free. For instance, if you needed a shot of someone on a steel beam 1,000 feet up on a New York skyscraper, then there was always someone willing to do the scene for real, and often for free. Second, the Spanish-American War had just ended, and there were many physically fit young men who were trained in the handling of firearms and looking for some work. The first picture which used a dedicated stunt performer is highly debated, but occurred somewhere between 1903 and 1910. The first possible appearance of a stunt double was Frank Hanaway in The Great Train Robbery, shot in 1903. However, the first accounted for paid stunt was in the 1908 film The Count of Monte Cristo, with $5 paid by the director to the acrobat who had to jump upside down from a cliff into the sea.
That's bonkers. And I know sometimes like old-timey money can be weird.
Yeah.
So I ran $5 through WestEgg.
Yeah.
Which is just an inflation calculator.
Yeah, sure.
It's still only $150.
To just jump straight down into the water from a cliff. Do you know how tall this cliff was by any chance?
I couldn't figure it out. Okay. But like, oh boy.
That's not enough.
Not enough. You got to jump out too so you don't hit like rocks. Just a tough look.
Hey, if you're listening to this and you're a freelancer or independent contractor, make sure you're getting paid what you're worth, because you're worth more than $105 for, Or 150?
150, yeah.
Oh, so sorry. I really lowballed there.
An extra 45.
$150 to put your life at risk.
Yeah, it's wild. I mean, this would have been like, I guess there would have just been a lot of unemployment at this time.
Yeah.
Because it was pre-World War I when things were kind of rough.
It makes sense that there was this new thing that people were just excited to be part of it. So nobody thought to like actually charge what they were worth or like
that's true.
Get compensated for it. I mean, that's kind of the internet in a nutshell, right? Like, it's a bunch of free stuff that all exploded and, like, became available instantly. And now we're kind of in the process of figuring out, like, oh, musicians should be paid. How do we do that with streaming? And, how do you handle movies and all of this stuff?
How did, like, the Homestar Runner guys make money?
Merchandise, at least.
Is that it? Yeah.
I guess. Because there are no ads.
Yeah.
And everything was
flash,
free.
So
right. I don't know. If you make Homestar Runner, contact us and tell us how much money do you have. Just go ahead, tell us.
Some of your W-2s.
Really, really like stretching how much power we have with our with our platform here.
The Brothers Chaps. I would love to hear from them. So as movies developed, though, stunts began to change, and that's kind of where our episode is going to split. You know, so we could talk about people like Buster Keaton, who were doing like really insane stunt work. There are his stunt compilations on YouTube where he's like doing things live where like, you know, that the clip where like the house falls on him.
Yes,
that's a real house. And if he was like a foot in either direction, like it would have hit the back of his head and killed him instantly.
Yeah,
that's not good.
Wow.
But, yeah. Like, you know, that's a stunt. That's kind of a daredevil-y thing to do. And there's clips of him, like, I think that same movie he made has one where he's, like, on top of the house, and then the frame rotates and, like, swings him to the bottom. And, like, that's very scary.
Get it, Buster Keaton.
Yeah, he was wild.
Madman.
Yeah. And, you know, there's still people today, like Jackie Chan.
Yeah.
Who does a lot of his own stunts. I think all his own stunts up to a certain point, right?
Yeah, I believe so.
Yeah. I know Tom Cruise broke his leg doing like Mission Impossible or something like that.
Tom Cruise is a fucking crazy person.
Well, yeah.
Well, on many levels. But there's an article that I may link to in the episode description. There's a film website that I follow called Bright Wall Dark Room. And on it, there's an essay write-up written by Fran Hoffner about Mission Impossible Fallout and comparing that to Free Solo, which I think we might talk about.
Oh, yes.
Okay. So I guess, you know, Tom Cruise did all of his own climbing, fighting, jumping, just like crazy stunts for that. And people were making that film kind of wondering, like, is he okay? Are we going to film him dying and like stuff like that? It's a really cool write-up, but just like...
Yeah, you should absolutely post that. I'm very interested in reading that.
It's good.
But, so, you know, even though there were folks like Keaton and Jackie Chan and Tom Cruise who do their own stunts and like get a lot of credit for it, you know, like that's cool. They still have the advantage of like planning it out and rigging everything up and multiple takes, you know?
Right.
Like if you start something and it's like, I don't know. You can always just walk it back and do another take.
Right.
You know? But what I really want to focus on for the rest of the episode is people who came after movies happened, but decided that they still wanted to do their stunts live. So one of the first people who made that pivot was a guy named Rodman Law.
Cool name.
Cool name. So this guy was a, quote, trick parachutist. And he basically invented base jumping. Here's a photo of one of his first stunts.
That's the Statue of Liberty he's parachuting off of.
Yep. He was bonkers. You know what the goofiest thing about this photo is?
What's that?
Like, this is just a photo of a guy jumping with a parachute by the Statue of Liberty. He had never used a parachute before. Here's a newspaper story about this jump. From the February 3rd, 1912 edition of the Washington Herald newspaper.
Man drops from Liberty's torch. Steeplejack makes foolhardy leap for the benefit of moving picture concern. New York, February 2nd. F. Rodman Law, Steeplejack by profession, biggest fool in New York by self-description, and always willing to try anything once, leaped from the uppermost ledge of the torch of the Statue of Liberty this afternoon with a parachute, a distance of 345 feet. For 150 feet, he dropped at lightning speed, within 6 feet of the statue. The spectators, horror-stricken, feared that the canvas would never open. Indeed, professional jumpers almost unanimously declared that the distance was too short for the descent to be sufficiently checked. But, about midway down the goddess's figure, the parachute spread out, and with Law's body swinging and swaying from the trapeze, perilously near the statue, bore him to earth. He landed with a bump on the frozen grass at the foot of the pedestal. He was stunned and his right leg was painfully wrenched, but otherwise he was all right. Law's feat was performed for the benefit of a moving picture concern, and was witnessed only by a handful of friends and the couple of hundred soldiers on Bedloe's Island. He got $1,500 for it. Quote, "I'm going off the Eiffel Tower in Paris next summer. This jumping business is an awful cinch." Today's jump was made without any previous experience whatever. Law had never even seen a parachute at close range, and had never been up in the Statue of Liberty. He said, quote, "I just had a hunch that it would be a good moving picture stunt, so I went to the picture people and hired out to do it. Why, it was like picking up money in the street. It was a great experience. I guess that's about as fast as I ever traveled, the first 150 feet. Gee, it almost took the breath out of me. It looked as though the ground was jumping right up to hit me. I began to wonder if that blamed old parachute was ever ready to open up."
That's bonkers.
What a absolute psychopath. That's amazing.
He had never seen a parachute before.
Or, like, didn't scout out the fucking Statue of Liberty before he decided, I'm gonna jump off that thing.
Jump off that.
Amazing.
His sister was also, like, a aviation daredevil, like an aviatrix.
Hell yeah.
Which is sick. Like, they just came from a family of, like, psychos, I guess.
Fuck death. We're not afraid.
But, like, that's base jumping.
Yeah.
That's a building structure. What is it? Building structure trestle earthwork?
Building antenna span and earth slash cliff.
Okay. Building antenna span earth. Yeah.
Thank you, Wikipedia.
Yeah. But, I mean, he was, like, the first guy to be like, what if you just jump off this thing, you know?
Right.
I also like that it says he landed with a bump, but that also his leg was painfully wrenched, which probably means that it was dislocated in, like, 12 places.
Yeah, learn how to use a parachute before you use a parachute.
It's so goofy. But, like, yeah, this is when we start to see people, like, actually being able to make real money by doing this stuff. Like, $1,500 in 1912 was $39,404 today. So he made money with this.
Yeah.
I mean, good for him. Like,
yeah.
I guess the studio is probably like, well, maybe he'll just die and we'll have to pay it.
And we don't have to pay him then.
Yeah.
Gee.
Gee. It was like the ground was jumping up at me. Lord. But I don't know. I don't deal with this stuff well at all. Like, I hate scary things. I don't like roller coasters. Are you a roller coaster guy? I don't know.
I like roller coasters. You and I have a shared fear of heights, but mine is a little bit more maybe to do with falling. Like, I've realized I'm more afraid of falling than I am heights.
Uh-huh.
And by that I mean, like, I can do roller coasters. They are scary and they freak me out a little bit, but I'm always excited to go on them.
Okay.
But, you know, the tower drop? Yeah, my girlfriend and I went to the fair this year and did that, and I felt my heart in my throat. Like, that wigs me out. And climbing? I'm awful at climbing. Recently, though, I went with one of my friends to go bouldering. You know what bouldering
is? Okay, yeah, where you don't have a harness, right?
Yeah, you don't have a harness because the whole structure is, like, no more than 10 feet tall.
Yeah.
At the highest point. So it's like, if you fall, there's a little pad underneath, you just fall on the pad, you're fine. I love that. I realized, like, oh, I don't hate climbing. I just hate being up in the air. Even when I'm on a rope, just that little bit of falling freaks me out.
I don't know. I cannot get down with that at all.
Just any heights at all.
Just do not like heights. I can fly fine.
Right. But when you're in an enclosed tube.
Yeah.
Sure.
And, you know, I, at my height, and definitely at your height, probably aisle seat guys.
Yeah, but, preferably.
Yeah. So that's fine, because I'm not really looking out the window. But, I don't know. Some people love that stuff. And that's how we get people like Evel Knievel in this world. You think he's, like, uniquely American?
Yeah. I mean, he literally dressed up in the flag, basically.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think Evel Knievel is a very iconic American hero, right?
Sure.
I kind of seem silly to say next to someone who, like, I don't know, literally died for human rights and stuff like that, but Evel Knievel was a badass, and he was American as shit. And really, is there anything more American than just doing dumb shit to try and make money off of it? He's an icon.
I like that. Evel Knievel is one of those dudes who I would not be surprised if everyone in America who listened to this podcast was like, oh yeah, totally. And everyone abroad was like, what?
Everyone outside of the States, let us know just like what you knew about Evel Knievel before listening to this podcast. I'm kind of curious about that too.
Yeah, it's goofy, but he was a weirdo and he had like a full mythos about himself. So here is his own personal mythos. Mythos? What do you say? I don't know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think.
But this is it, pulled from his personal website.
Evel Knievel was born Robert Craig Knievel on October 17th, 1938, in Butte, Montana. After a police chase in 1956, in which he crashed his motorcycle, Knievel was taken to jail on a charge of reckless driving. When the night jailer came around to check roll call, he noted Robert Knievel in one cell and William Knoffel in another. Knoffel was well known as Awful Knoffel, so Knievel began to be referred to as Evel Knievel. Evel Knievel made the leap from rural county fairs to sold-out stadiums through a unique combination of bravado, determination, and promotional genius. He invented himself and his business, jumping, crashing, and miraculously recovering to promise even more outrageous stunts to come. In one of his first jumps for ABC's Wide World of Sports, Knievel successfully jumped 50 stacked cars at the Los Angeles Coliseum in front of a crowd of 35,000. This performance led to a world record where Evel jumped 14 Greyhound buses at Kings Island Amusement Park in Ohio in 1975. Evel Knievel is an inspiration to people, young and old, who recognize they want to be in control of their own destiny. People who want to go out and do great things. People who use drive, determination, personality, and hard work to become their own legend.
And I think right there is where you start to see the connection between daredevils and death, which is why we're doing this, you know? That idea of becoming your own legend, of leaving something behind. And, you know, Knievel's legacy was wearing a fringed American flag leather jacket and jumping 14 buses in a motorcycle.
Fuck yeah.
But his whole thing was kind of he wanted to make a name for himself. And he was really good at promotion and he was really good at falling down well.
Charging a motorcycle into an explosion and getting up again.
And going through like fire hoops and stuff like that.
Hell yeah.
He was doing this because he wanted to survive beyond his own death. You know, he wanted to have a legacy, his own legend. So Knievel talked about this in one of his last interviews he gave before he died. This is very silly. It was with Maxim magazine. Because, like, of course he was in one of those magazines that's, like, behind the little protector thing at the gas station.
Yeah, I mean, again, what's more American than that, than showing up in it? Was it a nude magazine or just like scandalous bikini magazine?
It says International Men's Magazine, so
all right,
probably.
Are you saying you only read Maxim magazine for the articles, Max?
I only read it for the articles.
Research, honey.
I'm learning.
Anyway, very American.
Yeah, but here's what his quote from that was.
You can't ask a guy like me why I performed. I really wanted to fly through the air. I was a daredevil, a performer. I loved the thrill, the money, the whole macho thing. All those things made me Evel Knievel. Sure, I was scared. You gotta be an ass not to be scared. But I beat the hell out of death.
It's kind of funny how engaged... I mean, I guess you would have to be engaged with mortality and death in this profession, you know?
Right.
But this is terror management theory.
Yeah.
And, you know, we went over that in like our second episode or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But that's the idea that we all want to have our name be remembered. You know, you want to leave behind a legacy. So if you are thinking about your own death when you're doing something, you're going to do it better or your performance is going to be improved because the idea of your legacy is on your mind. You think about leaving something behind.
Yeah. So it's not just that like terror management theory is just like fearing your impending death motivates you. It's that like you see death, you're like, I don't want to leave this world without leaving something behind. And then that kind of presses you to do more outrageous, crazy things.
Yeah. And it would probably help you like dial in a bunch too. You know, if you're like, if you're jumping a motorcycle over a bunch of buses, you got to have like pinpoint focus and awareness of what you're doing and what your body's doing and what the motorcycle's doing.
Right.
And I imagine the adrenaline you would get from being like, if I screw this up, I'm going to die, would help out with that. So
yeah, when the stakes are high, you got to really focus.
Yeah. And, you know, I can't really speak for a lot of these people and their motivations unless it's like explicitly stated, like Knievel did. But you got to think that like a fear of death and a need to be remembered through like a legacy, there's got to be some kind of factor in doing this stuff, you know?
Yeah.
You don't just do this because you're like, well, I guess I can make money climbing this building or something.
Right. If like, you want to just make money, there's much more passive and safe ways to do that.
Yeah. And like that guy who walked between the Twin Towers, he wasn't just like, I can make like a couple $100 doing this, you know?
Right.
Like he was like, I want to make a statement.
I want Joseph Gordon-Levitt to play me in a movie and have a very uncanny resemblance to me.
Yeah.
Wearing ice blue contact lenses.
Is it like Philippe something?
I don't remember.
Yeah.
Some legacy he left behind.
You know whose name I do know, though, because he had that big IMAX movie, is Alex Honnold, who's in Free Solo, which you just recently watched, right?
Yes, I did.
Where'd you watch it at?
The comfort of my own home.
Okay.
Laying down completely prone on a couch.
Okay.
And I still was nauseated and felt like I was going to fall to my death about 15 times throughout that movie.
Okay. I saw it on like an IMAX screen here in Columbus.
Yeah. That had to be the way to watch it.
That was not. I don't like heights. We've talked about it.
Right.
I did not feel comfortable even briefly when watching that movie. Like the base jumping scene in that movie where like the guy falls.
Yeah.
And he just falls for a second and they don't tell you, but he's wearing a parachute. That was like the worst part.
There's a good like 10 seconds of him just straight falling. And that it's in the same segment where they're talking about climbers that have fallen to their death.
Yeah.
I literally thought, I was watching it with one of my roommates. I was like, is he dead? Is that guy fucking dead?
It's like they can't.
And we were both just like screaming. Like, oh my god! And then the parachute pops out last second. Yeah, don't watch that movie if you are prone to heart attacks.
Yeah.
It's one big long heart attack.
Since you watched it recently, can you just give the plot summary real quick?
So Alex Honnold is a professional climber. He specializes specifically in free solo climbing, which free climbing is when you climb a mountain or a cliff and you use basically a system of rope and hooks to kind of hook your you hook your way up into these holds that you build as you climb. That's free climbing. Free solo climbing is no ropes, no harness, no hooks, just your hands and some chalk climbing up the face of a cliff by yourself. And Alex Honnold decides he wants to climb El Capitan, the operating system. It's a mountain that was it 3,000 feet tall?
It's something stupid.
Hold on. Okay, yeah. 3,600 feet over the western end of the Yosemite Valley. So the documentary is about Alex Honnold climbing this. It's fascinating, too. It goes into his prep work before that, and he talks a lot, too, about the relationship that he's trying to have with his girlfriend and lots of interesting stuff.
Yeah.
But there are some scenes that made me want to shit myself to death.
Yeah, it's... I feel like his whole life is kind of a masterclass in, like, accepting your mortality.
Yeah.
Because he's doing this thing which you could really easily die from. And then there's a whole segment in the movie which talks about, like, all of his friends who have died. He's interviewed, like, multiple times about, like, does this person's death make you want to quit? And he's, like, the most laid-back dude. He's just kind of like, eh, no.
Right. There's interesting parts of the movie, too. Like, at one point, he gets a CAT scan to see what's going on with his brain. And I think it's his amygdala just does not have any activity in it. Or some part of his brain that is kind of a natural...
The fear thing, yeah.
Yeah, freak out, fear, warning system. And it does explain so much of his attitude and his interactions with other human beings throughout the movie.
Yeah.
Really fascinating. Really worth watching.
Yeah. I mean, I think if you're raised in, like, a less... good situation than he was, that's how you, like, become a serial killer, is because you don't fear things, and you're like, well, I'm not gonna get caught, I'll just, like, get out of it, I'll figure it out, you know.
Sure. Yeah, there's probably some other factors that would have to make him a serial killer, but yeah, I see your point.
Yeah. But he's been asked about death a lot, you know. I've listened to, like, podcast interviews with him. There was a really good, like, REI interview with him. National Geographic did one too. And they asked him, like, straight up, like, what do you think about death? This is the answer that he gives.
A lot of people say I don't feel fear, or that I don't fear death, but that's just not true. I have the same healthy hope of survival as everybody else. I don't want to die, at least not yet. I think I just have more of an acceptance that I will die at some point. I understand that, but I don't want to baby myself along the way. I want to live in a certain way, which requires taking a higher degree of risk, and that's acceptable to me. Being on big granite walls is a constant reminder that nature just does not care. You're just another animal that slipped off something. I've seen animals fall off cliffs. I saw a mountain goat bite it in Mexico, which was crazy because you think of them as being so majestic and sure-footed. I saw a squirrel fall off a cliff once. I was like, holy shit, even squirrels. That's nature, you know.
Yeah, it's interesting to see how this is, like, the same attitude early Daredevils had, where they were just like, I guess I'm just going to do this, you know?
Yeah.
And how it morphed into, like, a legitimate sport, and how this guy is, like, making, how Alex Honnold is making a career out of this, you know?
Right.
I think part of the reason he has money to do, like, a big foundation and stuff is because he lives in, like, a conversion van.
He has very simple living needs.
There's, like, a plot line in Free Solo about him buying a house.
Yeah.
He's so just interesting. Like, it's so big, and, like, it's clearly weirded out by, like, living in more than one room.
Yeah.
Just very goofy.
I might have to watch that movie again. And I hate myself for acknowledging that, but I might have to watch that movie again. Just put myself through that shit again.
I should. Because it's been a while since I've seen it.
I want to see it on an IMAX screen. That sounds amazing.
Yeah, just, like, the scale of this mountain thing, and then him being, like, a little blip, you know?
Right. Like a life-size blip on the massive screen.
Yeah. I don't know. But he's doing the same thing as, like, Evel Knievel was here. You know, he's trying to make a name for himself. Like, the same as those guys who were rolling out of the Spanish-American War and were going to Hollywood and were like, I can shoot a gun, I can fall off a horse, you know, I can do this stuff. He's trying to create a legend. And I guess it's pretty easy to create a legend for yourself when you are the absolute best in the world at what you do.
Yeah.
And you have a major motion picture made about your life. But it's kind of scary to think about trying to do that in a risky way normally.
Right.
And you can see, like, the guys who are making the movie are clearly conflicted about making it.
Yeah.
Like, they're saying a lot like, well, what happens if he falls? What do we do with our footage, you know?
Right. There's one sequence where one of the cameramen is literally just looking the opposite direction as he's filming Alex climb. It's like one of the last few pitches of the mountain.
Yeah.
And he literally just can't even look. And the camera just shows him just painfully looking away and, like, worrying and fretting. And yeah. the director of the film is, like, talks about how Alex is his friend. And they're like,
yeah,
we might film him dying. I don't know. And this is horrific to think about, but this is a very real possibility.
Yeah. But I don't know. Just that idea of, like, that need to create a legacy being so strong is really remarkable. And I think it's kind of a death positivity thing, you know, like,
right.
If you accept that you're going to die, then you're kind of forced to confront, like, the fact that life goes on after you die. I think when you recognize that, then you're like, well, I want my life to have some sort of meaning afterwards. And you're kind of confronted with the choice of having to either, like, find a legacy and find a meaning to your life or create it on your own.
Yeah.
And, like, Honnold is outspoken atheist and is like, well, this is how I am creating my own meaning.
Right.
You know, this is what I'm doing. This is how I'm creating my legacy. And I know both of us, like, follow the teachings of Jesus and we're, like, more on the finding meaning side.
Yeah.
You know?
Right.
But it's kind of remarkable to think about, like, when you go to see, like, a stunt like this or some kind of daredevil thing performed, then you're like, oh, wow, I wonder what would happen if that guy died, if that fear babe died, and then having to kind of deal with that in your own life, like, oh, what would happen if I died, you know?
Right.
And having to construct your life's meaning, you know?
It's very interesting. And I don't know, for me, one takeaway from a lot of these guys is, like, having this approach to life of just kind of recognizing you can die, you might as well take on life and, as Evel Knievel says, be in control of your own destiny. I think that there's value to that, that you probably cut through a lot of bullshit in life that just does not matter. I think mm-hmm. that whatever your beliefs are about the afterlife or God or anything like that, you can agree that life has a lot of things that are distracting and pointless and just like suck up all of our attention and energy and sometimes money and other resources, that it's like, I don't know, there's a lot of value to kind of getting to this point where maybe I'm not going to climb a 3,000-foot mountain anytime soon, but it does challenge me to think, what is really actually important with my life?
Yeah.
I mean, there are things that I want to do that, like, I don't want to waste a bunch of time on other things that are, like, focus-consuming activities in life that ultimately will not matter, and I might even regret having spent so much time on those things.
Yeah.
Something about this perspective of being at this point with death, comfortable with the fact that it will happen and it's completely outside of your control, makes me rethink some things.
Yeah. What's the other Evel Knievel thing? He says beating the hell out of death.
Yeah. It's badass.
Yeah. It's pretty tight. That's all I had for fear babes. So.
Good. Well, you and I might not be fear babes ourselves, but mad respect for the fear babes.
Yeah.
Keep doing your thing.
Lots to chew on.
Yes.
I'll go see your movies.
Absolutely. Well, thank you, Max, for putting together this research. Thank you for putting together this nightmare fuel, where I think about human beings getting launched through the air, falling to their death, falling off of a statue and breaking their legs because they never learned how to use a parachute. Just got a lot.
They've never seen a parachute.
Never even seen a parachute. Bunch of fucking morons. Anyway. Tell us what you think of these crazy, crazy people, and if you have any good daredevil stories, you should tell us, whether they are from someone you know or your own. I would love to know if somebody listens to this podcast and does some wild, reckless shit.
Yeah, if you're just like a base jumper.
Can I tell you about a hypothetical story that may or may not have happened? Like, it's of questionable legality, so I can't say whether or not it happened.
I see what's going on.
Can I tell you a story? So I had a roommate a few years ago. Well, more than a few years ago, like when I was in college. He was an avid climber and risk taker.
Okay.
He was also an engineer and someone I did trust a lot.
But okay.
If he says, I have tied this rope in a way that it will not come loose, I trusted him.
Sure.
And he doesn't, he's a very serious guy. He doesn't like fuck around, play pranks. Like, trustworthy guy.
Yeah. Like, knot people are knot people. Like, people who are really into knots, they know what they're doing.
K-N-O-T.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. People who are really into knots know what the fuck they're doing.
Yeah, absolutely. He was one of those people. We may or may not have gone to an abandoned, at the time recently shut down, outdoor music venue in Columbus.
Okay.
I don't know if this actually happens. And he may or may not have made a rope swing in this amphitheater, where if you climbed up to the top, the roof of the amphitheater, there was like a little like access ladder that would take you down. You remember those platforms
The
lighting rigs and stuff were affixed to? So this hypothetical rope swing that may or may not have actually existed, but probably not, was tied in the center of the amphitheater, and you drop down from the platform and swing back and forth. And then when you were done swinging, this person would like lower the rope so that you would be safely lowered down to the ground in the seats of the amphitheater. So some people may have done this. And one person who you might know, me, might have gone up to do this and literally had a panic attack on the roof of this amphitheater and been unable to actually swing.
Oh my God.
Climb back down the ladder and literally shivering and shaking and like freaking out. That's when I realized, hypothetically, that I am like way more afraid of falling than heights. Because I was, hypothetically, up high.
Yeah.
Fine. But then when it came time to jump and plummet, hypothetically, I literally had a panic attack.
The mental picture that I have of this maybe non-existent amphitheater.
Yes. Certainly
that's
non-existent
a big, that's
anymore.
That's a big drop. Yeah, non-existent anymore.
Yeah. That's the only Daredevil story that I personally have of someone I might know, or that it's urban legend and didn't happen.
Who knows?
If you want to tell us stories about things you did of questionable legality and you want us to keep it completely anonymous, maybe we'll share some of those stories.
Yeah, we'll do it.
Of you having some close calls with death. I would love to hear that, actually. You can tweet at us or find us on Instagram at PreDeadBoys. Email us predeadboys@gmail.com or find our Facebook group by just searching PreDeadBoys. We would love to hear just any comments and questions you have. We love talking with people.
Absolutely.
It's been really cool having this podcast be a connecting point with people all over the world. It's wild. Keep on talking to us. We love you guys. Also, if you want to support our podcast and what we do and help us kind of offset the cost of making this thing, join our Patreon. It's awesome. You get rewards for giving us money. You can get wallpapers for your phone.
My mom is using one.
Yeah.
You'd be like my mom.
Mrs. McKenna, God bless you. Also, we are 1/3 of the way to our goal of making $100 a month total off of donations. And once we hit that goal, we'll actually start making bonus episodes like the Texas Chainsaw Massacre and The Thing and Uzumaki. We'll actually make those exclusive to patrons at the $5 level once we start making enough to produce those. So go check out patreon.com/predeadboys and consider pledging some money if you haven't already. I was telling Max earlier about some very special holiday wallpapers that I am illustrating.
Very excited about
it. In the process of making. So make sure you sign up for those. And thanks to everyone who signed up so far. This is like, you know, something we just set up a few weeks ago and we already have 9 patrons. And
yeah, it's very cool.
It's very generous of you. We really appreciate it. It helps us out a ton. We are also still accepting donations through ko-fi.com/predeadboys. For example, my Aunt Sue, who I love dearly,
aww,
sent us money and sent us a very nice message.
Aww.
She said, impressed with the depth of research. I'm learning a lot listening to you guys and enjoying some laughs along the way. Keep the death knell ringing. She put a little skull emoji.
Aww. It's very sweet.
Thank you very much, Aunt Sue. It's good to have family support for the podcast.
Yeah.
Also, just if you don't have money, you're strapped for cash. I know the holidays are coming up. You're trying to save up and buy a new car for your dad.
Did you say new car?
Right. So you can just tell your friends about the podcast or give us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts or Stitcher and we'll read it right here and give you a little shout out. You'll be famous on one episode of our podcast. Your 15 minutes.
It'll last forever though.
That's true. You can always go back to the recording and be like, hey, I'm in this bitch.
I remember when.
Ooh, I almost forgot. If you support us at the $5 level on Patreon, we read your name on the podcast.
It's true.
I forgot that that's a promise that
it's
made.
It's a perk.
So, without further ado, thank you very much to Daniel Peralta, Evan Latch, Fizz Cockman, Jennifer Berry, Justine McKenna, Mike Nooner, Sarah, and Thomas Daniel Falera for your contributions of $5. Y'all are the best.
I hope we didn't dox anybody by including their last names. Whatever.
Those are hypothetical last names. There may or may not be a human being named Fizz Cockman donating to this podcast. We don't know. Our intro and outro music is the song About Time by Brat Curse. Check them out at bratcurse.bandcamp.com. Buy their record. Fucking slaps.
So good.
And that's going to do it for us.
So we still got the whole day ahead of us. We got, well, I guess it's like close to winter, so we have 6 hours of daylight at this point, maybe.
It's been raining. It's very dreary outside. So I think that like that nice slick moisture on rock faces is going to make for some very thrilling climbing today. Are you trying to go down to the Audubon Center and go to the climbing wall? I don't really have any ropes, but I figure like we're good enough climbers that we probably
scramble up there.
Yeah, we'll do it. We'll base jump off the top of it. Don't worry, I brought trash bags to parachute down.
That thing's like 40 feet tall.
Yeah, that's why they're extra large trash bags.
It is wild that we live in a city that just has like just a 40-foot thing that is you can climb on unsupervised.
Yeah, they just let you.
That's bonkers.
Very trusting city.
Yeah.
You should not do that. Irresponsible. Anyway, Max and Dorian here reminding you, you're gonna rock.
One of his last interviews he gave before he died was with, like, I don't know, like, I forget what this is from. Fuck me.
It's all good. That's why I edit, baby.
Baby! I've been putting on my resumes and stuff, like, oh, I've, like, done research for podcasts for, like, 1.5 years plus.
Yeah.
And I probably could not, every time I mess up, in a work podcast, just say fuck
or go.
Okay. Mostly due to the early history of this kind of stunt performance. And people have already.